is Davin's Den.
Let's get lost together.
All right, we are back. Thank you guys for hanging out at Davin's Den. So this was my blog of the week. My blog of the week has to do with doctors and free speech. We were talking about free speech earlier. We weren't talking about doctors and free speech.
Not necessarily, but it all fits.
Governor Newsom signed a law that will punish California doctors for spreading false information about COVID-19 vaccines and treatments. He pledged that it would apply only to the most egregious instances of misleading patients. What the hell's that?
Sorry.
Is that your phone?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Stop.
Right. Before the law, the nation's first of its kind takes effect on January 1st, it faces legal challenges seeking to declare it an unconstitutional infringement of free speech. The plaintiffs include doctors who have spoken out against government and expert recommendations during the pandemic, as well as legal organizations from both sides of the political spectrum. That's how you know it's bad. when everybody can line up and go, this sucks.
Whenever you get both sides together, that's got to be tremendous.
Sure. Our system opts towards a presumption that speech is protected, said Hannah Kishnick, a lawyer for the Northern California branch of the American Civil Liberties Union, which submitted a friend of the court brief in favor of the challenges filed in October in U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. That lawsuit and another filed last month in the Eastern District of California have become an extension of the broader cultural battle over the COVID-19 pandemic, which continues to divide Americans along stark partisan lines. They could also more broadly test what steps, if any, the government can take to combat the scourge of misinformation and disinformation, even in the cases where it affects personal and public health. The law, narrowly written in hopes of avoiding First Amendment entanglements, would designate the spread of false or misleading information to patients as unprofessional conduct subject to punishment by the agency that regulates the profession, the Medical Board of California, that could result in fines or a suspension or revocation of a doctor's license to practice in the state. California Medical Association, which represents nearly 50,000 physicians in the state, sponsored the legislation, but the doctors involved in the two lawsuits argue that the law's provisions remain both vague and excessively intrusive, my favorite type of provisions. They warn that the law's definition of misinformation as falsehoods that violate contemporary scientific consensus would stifle doctors' abilities to advise patients honestly about the pros and cons of COVID-19 treatment and policies. Republican-controlled states have gone in the opposite direction. Texas adopted a law to allow citizens or the state's attorney general to sue social media companies for removing posts because of political points of view. Legal challenges to it, and another in Florida involving candidates for elected office, has swung back and forth and could reach the Supreme Court. The plaintiffs in California have sought injunctions to block the law even before it goes. Anyway, all right. One discusses the efficacy of masks for school children, the side effects on vaccines of young men, exposed this doctor to vehement criticism on social media. She said partly because they fell outside the scientific consensus. But this law wouldn't have to do with social media. I think it just has to do with conversations between a doctor and the patient. So they said it's going to cause very broad self-censorship and self-silencing. The lawsuits highlights the legal hurdles facing states that have sought to curb misinformation or disinformation. I'm just trying to skim through this.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Sure.
Did you get the feeling from reading this article that it was only about conversations between doctor and patient?
Yes, what's that?
Or was it the larger point of doctors spreading misinformation to the public?
Nope.
Anywhere else?
Nope. Just doctors and patients.
Doctors and patients conversations.
And just okay. Apparently COVID-19. Apparently, this is a COVID-19 law.
Very narrow. Okay. I wasn't sure myself.
The law supporters argued that it was needed to protect patients from doctors who had fueled skepticism about vaccine and mask mandates or encouraged the use of drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which have not proved to be effective against the coronavirus. Of course, some doctors say it is. The American Medical Association has blamed disinformation for worsening the pandemic's toll. In June, it adopted a policy that, among other things, called for empowering state licensing boards to discipline doctors who spread it in their capacity as health professionals. All right, that's basically the gist of it. Oh, my God, it's a long-ass fucking article.
It's a really long article, I want to tell you.
But yeah, yeah.
That's the gist of it. I'm not going to read the whole fucking thing. That's the gist of it.
Yeah.
So they
I tell you, when I got done reading the fucking article, I think I'm ready to take my test for the board.
I think I was ready to take any doctor's information on to help me.
Basically, they want to, and it's not jail time or anything. It's fines and possibly losing your ability to practice law in California.
Law or practice medicine?
Practice medicine. Well, I'll tell you another thing. You can't practice law with a medical degree in California either.
Better not try.
But yeah. So the people who are against this law are saying, you know, this is free speech. We should be able to say what we want to say. And Governor Newsom and the people who wrote the law go, yeah, but you're screwing up people's health. This is egregious. I mean, here's the thing. First of all, it's weird that it just pertains to one thing, to just COVID-19.
Yeah.
That's weird. And the thing with the coronavirus, the science, the advice was constantly changing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one minute, I mean, they started with don't wear masks, then do wear masks. And, you know, and the vaccine started with it'll protect you and everybody else. Then it went to it'll just protect you. Then it went to, you won't get it as bad. I mean, so.
Right. And with that being in mind, do you sue those people or fine those people for being incorrect, or, you know, prescribing something that turned out not to be true? Also, in the case of hydrochloric,
ivermectin.
All right. There was a case study that in some cases, not a total thing, in some cases it was effective. Now, with that being said, it's the body chemistry that you have. I mean, for a majority of the people, no, it's not going to work. But for some people, it would work. So if you're a doctor that feels that in that case that you do have a propensity to for this to work, and you feel that you could prescribe it, and now you're going to get a fine or something like that, it takes you away from you prescribing something you feel that could help a patient due to their body chemistry or how they would react to it. And it could, even though it's going to be for COVID-19, it could be if they get, you know, take an inch and they'll get a mile, it could be for a cancer treatment or something like that. This is why they call it a practice. It's a practice. I mean, nothing is set in stone because it's science. It's the way people react to a medication due to their body chemistry. So for them to put something in stone to say, even if you recommend something that they deem that is not proper, I don't think it's right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was I going to say? I mean, but we also do have civil lawsuits. We do have torts, where if a doctor gives you such bad advice, you can sue them. They can lose their license due to civil lawsuits. So it seems a little redundant.
Yes.
Listen, people go to doctors, if you want to call them that, for butt implants, and they wind up getting cement in their ass. We've covered that story, too. Now, that seems like, but that was covered. I don't know if there was a criminal action, but there was certainly a civil action. But I don't think we need another law for this. I don't know if it's really just.
And like I said, it's how medications respond with a certain body chemistry. I'll give you an example. When I get a cold, I take Vicks Daycare. Swear by it. Can't get through the day without it. Now, there were some people who go, I took that. It doesn't do shit. I take Alka-Seltzer cold or whatever because body chemistry is different. So if I'm taking Vicks, is the medication no better? If it's treating the symptom in a certain person, then, you know, the recommendation is there.
Well, I mean, that's a tried and true thing. I have several different points that I have an issue with. Well, number one, isn't the horse already out of the barn?
No, that's why you get the ivermectin and puts it right back in.
Oh, okay, very good. Thanks, Wilbur. The other thing is that, as you were saying, the information and the ideas were constantly changing. And it's really strange to have this law about one particular medical issue after we've already gone through years of it and trying to narrow focus on what a doctor is allowed to say, just because they're trying to, like, it seems like they're trying to smush them into the orthodoxy of what the AMA suggests about something when they were still learning on the fly. And
right, exactly.
It really does seem like it's unfair to limit the discussions that doctors could have amongst themselves. But they're saying they can't discuss it with their patients. One issue, any issue, that doctors are not allowed to discuss.
No, patients? Because of the HIPAA laws. But no, this would be a patient complaining.
No. HIPAA laws is discussing with somebody else.
Right, I'm saying. So we would never know about this unless a patient complained.
Right. And one patient is allowed to complain. There are civil remedies, as you said.
There's Yelp, so, damn it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of remedies. But the thing is, and remedies, I didn't mean that as a pun. But they're, telling any doctor and patient what they're allowed to discuss behind closed doors in a medical facility does seem like it's going against freedom of speech. What is the next thing that doctors are not allowed to discuss with their patients? Maybe how to abort
her
a fetus?
Look at them knockers.
No, not unless that's what you specialize in.
That's what I would specialize
in. Stray away from the girls. But, you know, I mean, this is sounding like almost like a sneaky test case. Well, we can tell them what they're not allowed to talk about COVID. Next law is something that we don't want them to discuss because it suits our agenda. You're not allowed to discuss abortions with your patients, or else you'll lose your license.
If I was a doctor, I wouldn't discuss it. I would just have hangers hanging up in my closet, and I would point.
Jesus.
That way there was never a conversation. What? I'm a prop doctor.
And the thing about it is, you go back to, you know, we've had our fingers shaken at us for the past two, almost going on 3 years. You got to follow the science. If you were a doctor and feel that a person that you feel might benefit from something, you know, you're following the science. You've done your research. You have your medical opinion. You feel how it might be. So you're following the science. For them to turn around and go, well, if you discuss your feeling of the science with somebody, you could lose your license. It's totally taking away something that is changing, constantly evolving. You can't put a handcuff on that.
I think in our complete panic as the world and Americans, we were desperate to find something that would work, something that we could cling on to, and something that, you know, everybody jump on here and do what we think is the best thing to do.
You know what this is? You know? This is the other side of stupid Elon Musk. I'm doing a segue here. Mm-hmm. With his stupid tweet about prosecute Fauci. This is the other side. They're both on the same side of the coin, just on opposite sides.
Yeah.
I do think if we were doing this segment in July of 2020, I think there'd be a hell of an argument here, because we had all the drugs coming out that we're going to stop it and blah, 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 blah. But now we're seeing that, well, not so much. It's science. It's a practice. We're trying to figure it out. This is what the AMA and professionals was telling us. But unfortunately, you know, it's science. So I think it's giving us a different optic on this situation, on where you could, you know, on an opinion of a medical professional.
Also, we are still dealing with something that is itself changing and mutating. So we're trying to keep ahead of what to do about different versions of this thing. So it's not like there's got to be one stagnant opinion. I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one. I don't even play one on TV. But there can't be a stagnant, this is the rule, on something that itself is changing. We have to allow for the conversation.
You can't handcuff that opinion. Mm-hmm. You can't handcuff that opinion between a doctor and a patient.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I would be livid to be living in a state where the state was deciding what I could discuss with my doctor for my health.
Well, I mean, hands off my body, you know, it's kind of like the abortion thing.
100%.
That's why I couldn't believe Paul was arguing. He's like, dude, don't you get it? Both sides want to control everything. It's just what they want to control, their specific issue. This is too much. I mean, I think it comes from a good place. Like, because I think, you know, like Trump had like the voodoo doctor come in and everything.
Yes.
But that wasn't a conversation between her and the patient. That was going out there and saying her voodoo things. I don't remember her
name. That was her voodoo vaudeville.
Yeah, I, you know, and then of course there's people believing her and everything. Listen, this holistic man, you have a choice. You have the right. We all have the right to get a second opinion.
Right. I think that it's strange that they would come down on the conversations that doctors and patients could have in the privacy of, you know, a doctor's office, when, for example, we have legions of snake oil salesmen that we have seen, Dr. Oz, will go on the airwaves and tell their trusting audience that you can buy X, Y, and Z, and it's going to fix your X, Y, and Z. And it's like, gee, we don't seem to be half as upset about that as we do about controlling what doctors and patients can discuss.
And
I think we have a bigger problem.
The interesting thing is, you're right, and an interesting thing that Davin brought up is, well, it's both sides. Yeah, because you could see what DeSantis wants to put a new law through, and you're like, really? He could do that? And Gavin Newsom goes, hold my beer. You know, so it's, you know, yeah, both sides do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like I said, I think their heart's in the right place, but no, I mean, it's just, let the guild? I don't know what the hell they have.
The American Medical Association.
And the California Medical Association. Let the courts handle the civil lawsuits if somebody gives such bad advice, and we go from there. We always have. Yeah, we don't. It just seems redundant. It seems like, hey, I'm doing something over here. I'm working for you.
How am I doing?
Am I not working for you? Don't work for me, please.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole thing is, well, we want to stop misinformation. Well, there was a lot of misinformation you folks put out at the beginning, you know, in regards to what the vaccine could do and do not. Well, are we going to sue you? No, because it's medical science and it's imperfect. And it depends on the chemistry of a person.
I would have more respect for this law if it wasn't just for COVID-19.
Yes.
There's a rash, if there is or there isn't, I don't know, of like bad information being given to patients and everything, and we want to crack down on this. Okay,
yeah.
Now I'm interested. But when you just make it COVID-19 and we're still learning about it,
and
it's an agenda.
Yeah,
yep.
It sure is.
And it's a left-wing agenda, and we shan't have that on this show. Not on my watch.
Yes.
Damn you, libs! Give me my compound, shall I say.
Hysterical. We'll get on that platform yet.
I have no interest. if the people that are... I would go on Anthony. I don't even know if I would go on Anthony's show. I don't know.
I don't know if they make armor in my size.
Yeah, here's why. And it has nothing to do with Anthony. I always enjoy talking to Anthony.
Yeah.
It's because it's so slanted. I can't. I can't. All right, that's neither here nor there. All right, I'm trying to multitask. All right, let's do this Twitter thing. The Twitter files. It's kind of like the pedophiles, but you have to do it in 180 touches or less.
Oh.
No?
Oh, God, no.
No?
No.
You want more?
No, I need to move further away from you in this room.
Would you like a verified touch?
Oh, God.
I'll touch you with a blue check mark.
No.
How about that?
Silver.
Silver.
I'm silver.
You silver?
Or was it silver? Was it the gold? I don't know. Red? I don't know.
All right. Can I just say before we get into this, do you feel like Elon Musk has jumped the shark? Like, he's just bored. I mean, it's like if Donald Trump had his own social media platform. Wait, he does. It's like the same. Like, Trump is, I mean, Elon's now constantly tweeting. Trump is constantly truthing. Not the real truth, but on the truth social thing.
I guess this is
it used to be like you got, you know, a hot chick with big tits and a yacht. I guess now it's like a social media platform. Social media is the new chick with the big tits. You know what? You know, the new Twitter emblem is going to be going to be the bird with a rack. That's what Elon Musk is going to do.
the rat.
Sure. Poor bird will tip over, but...
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that's how the drinking bird really started.
Yes.
Oh, my tits are so big.
But that, remember when you had yourself a nice... You had, like, all the money in the world. And the other thing was, like, the Bill Gates thing, which I appreciate, is give all your money to charity. I appreciate that.
I like that.
But now there's like, I'm going to have everything gold and yachts and big boobs like the Donald Trump way, and they've migrated to social media. I'm going to control what everybody can say. And before I get into the story, all of a sudden, my feed, and I don't go on Twitter that much unless I have to promote shit or I just happen to have a joke. I'm not a huge fan of the platform, never have been. Yeah. It's full of people, like right-wing people, who I don't follow. Kind of, why am I following anybody if you're just going to put whatever you want to put there anyway? I was ready for the commercials and that shit. I realize somebody's got to pay for this, and it's not going to be me. But
so you weren't in there grooming your logarithm.
I was not.
No, see, and look what happened. Weeds.
I don't know. It's like really. Ugh. But I don't like Twitter anymore. But it means a lot.
I never did.
It means a lot to other people. So we'll cover it here, and it's a big deal.
Sure.
This is a lengthy one. We'll see how much of it I get to. All right. So it starts with the Twitter file. Elon Musk. I got the hot take on the Hunter Biden the email and the tweets and heck, and the story was squashed. Yes, it was squashed. We talked about it originally when it originally broke. Pip and I thought it was full of shit. I think Joe was a little bit more open to it than
I
did.
He was more open to it. It was full of shit.
Because, remember, it's right before the election. It's Joe Biden's son. And Joe Biden's son's laptop somehow winds up in a random computer store. And on this computer store, and on this laptop is, you know, Hunter Biden smoking crack and prostitutes and emails, and it's given to Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani, and the only one who can look at it is the New York Post. I'm sorry if it seemed a little fugazi at the time.
Yeah.
You want to know something? I think the one thing about it, it was so fugazi that to put it out would have to be a big belief in that. Because sometimes there's a situation that arises that you have to lie because the truth sounds so fucking preposterous that you go, you know what, I'll lie. If I tell the truth, it's just so fucking ridiculous, you know. But yes. I think that was one of those situations. But so for the Post to put that out, we go, well, there's going to be so much scrutiny. But the sources were correct, and they put it out, and they stood by it.
Yeah, but again, and listen, the New York Post, you know, when not many other people would talk to me, they talked to me about the Avalos thing. So I do have the lawsuit and everything and my credibility. Yeah. But they wouldn't even publish the shit I had because they were only 99% sure.
Right.
So I don't know. But it was kind of skeptical. Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon can't be your messenger. But it turns out. That shit was real. Okay.
Who knew?
Pip and I were wrong.
It sounded so ridiculous. It did. Joe, you're cracking me up with you have to tell a lie because the truth is so ridiculous.
And I'm right that sometimes something happens that's so fucking ridiculous. I go, if I explain, they're going to think I'm full of shit. I'm going to have to lie to make the story more palatable.
Yeah, just make it more normal sounding because it's like nobody will believe me.
Yeah.
I know.
All right. So the story goes out there and Twitter bars anyone from tweeting a link to it or sending it via direct message. They labeled it hacked material. The company also suspended the Post account for multiple days, preventing it from tweeting it further. That seemed a little extreme. Yoel Roth, by the way, who was just forced to leave his home because he's getting so many threats over this. Because, you know, Elon Musk has to let the people know. Again, it's like, doesn't this guy have a rocket ship to work on? I don't understand.
Don't have companies to run or something?
I mean, listen,
be busy.
I mean, he's just letting all the hate speech run. People are not going to go on Twitter. It'll be, okay, good, you have Truth Social with more people. But whatever, that's neither here nor there.
No.
Twitter's former head of trust and safety said in an interview this week that Twitter could not verify the story, implying he and others at the company did not trust the Post. It's a tabloid. I get it.
Yeah.
And remember, the New York Post would not let anybody see it. They would not let anybody. So that only adds to the skepticism.
Yeah, it sounds like, come on. Now, first of all, the chain of evidence is really sketch. But then you won't let anybody see it. And we're supposed to believe we're supposed to trust the provenance of this material. because you say so.
And the same people who own the New York Post also own Fox News. So we, you know, all in for Donald Trump at that time.
Yes,
and he was losing in the polls
at that
time. It has rarely, if ever, been part of Twitter's stated purpose to verify news stories. This exception appeared to be an intentional interference in the political process. The story in particular was especially hard to verify because the people who claimed to have found the laptop refused to get... I just said that. Much of the story, including part of Hunter's controversial business dealings in Ukraine and China, will be confirmed nearly 2 years later. Yeah, 2 years later. I mean, listen, I mean, why wouldn't the Post let some... Show it to the Wall Street Journal. You had the same owner there. People believe the Wall Street Journal.
Much more than the Post.
Very conservative paper. Yeah. Same owner.
The Wall Street Journal, not so much. Not so much.
Really?
Not the way it used to be.
Mm.
Ah. Okay. I guess they're no longer purporting abortions in alleys. I guess they've grown up. So Twitter's decision to bury the story became a scandal on the political right. Yeah, always something. And new Twitter CEO Elon Musk had promised an accounting of Twitter's controversial decision. Why? So the Twitter files named in the fashion of a Facebook whistleblower's leaked documents. Musk first teased the release late in the day on Friday afternoon, promising exclusive details of what really happened with Hunter Biden. This will be awesome, he promised, punctuating the tweet with a popcorn emoji. And that's how you know it's a serious story.
Because Pulitzer Prize stories always start with the popcorn emoji.
Good God. 3 hours later, journalist Matt Taibbi, who is a respected journalist.
Yes.
Kicked off a long thread of more than 36 tweets. That's the problem with the platform. You got to keep on hitting send 36 times. I'm not interested in that. Give me one long post to scroll past. God damn it.
Yeah, but you know what? And then if you end up posting that many times, you look crazy.
Matt Taibbi, crazed poster, based on internal Twitter documents that revealed what he described as Frankensteinian tale of human-built mechanism grown out of the control of its desire. To Musk, this release clears a dark cloud hanging over Twitter as he works to mold Twitter in his image, cleansing and redirecting both its publication, perception, and internal culture. It is possible that the CEO himself handled the documents handed to Taibbi. Of course he did. Yeah. It's possible. Of course he did. He called them, or didn't handle them. This is what it is. Where's your fax machine? You don't have a fax machine? Let me send a rocket. I'm Elon Musk. I'm going to give you the shit. What do you think? Matt Taibbi just discovered this shit? Yeah. No.
They met in trench coats in a parking garage.
Elon picked his favorite journalist, and the journals have a right to report it. That's
right. Yes, of course.
But we do not know for sure. Musk did hype the document dump ahead of and during its publication but Taibbi cited only internal sources that rhyme with Musk.
That rhyme with Musk.
I got it around dusk. Wink, wink. Nod, nod. In the thread, Taibbi shares screenshots from emails showing Twitter execs discussing. You know, I shared the same shit with the Post, and they're like, "Oh, our lawyers can't verify." Motherfucker, it's the same thing.
Don't be bitter.
A little bitter.
A little.
Taibbi shares screenshots from emails showing Twitter execs discussing the Post story and making efforts to block its distribution on the social network. The emails, Taibbi says, show the extraordinary steps Twitter took to suppress the story. The most damning quote within the files comes from an executive who discussed this decision as it unfolded. Twitter communications chief Brandon, oddly enough, Borman, asked in an email, "Can we truthfully claim that this is part of the policy? The story was so outlandish as to seem impossible. It seemed it could have not arisen from anything but a hack, or could it? And could Twitter, which ex-CEO Dick Costello called the free speech wing of the free speech party, defend censoring a news story, whatever its provenance?" Much of the reaction to the Twitter files, especially from the company's critics on the right, all right, basically what came out of the Twitter files is that Republicans and Democrats both had access to people at Twitter to squash and promote stories. Now, there's no proof that they did that, that either party did it, but they both had access to it. That government, and soon to be government, as luck would have it,
right,
had access to Twitter. Go, hey, we don't. Can you put the kibosh on that? So there is where you go into your real free speech argument.
Right.
That is the incriminating thing here, because Twitter, I would say, well, Twitter could do whatever it wants. Yeah, but when it's the government doing it, now they can't.
Right.
Because
right.
That's a First Amendment issue.
That's a huge overreach. When I mean, because we've talked about platforms can decide on their own rules. It's a company. It's not owned by the government. It's not if they decide that they are only going to be, like, you know, Truth Social, that it's going to be a place for conservative speak, then and they're going to, you know, maybe edit or block people that are saying things that they don't agree with, but that platform is allowed to do that. I mean, I would argue to say that Twitter is allowed to do that as a platform, but the government is not allowed to go in and tell, you know, they're not the same as a newspaper, but it's really a slippery slope to getting towards
the government can't put pressure on. Government should not put pressure on any private company or public company to do its bidding.
Yeah, right.
So both parties had access to these tools. For instance, in 2020, requests from both the Trump White House and Biden campaign were received and honored. It goes on to say that the system of reporting tweets for deletion was unbalanced because of the slant towards Democrat. Because they're saying a lot, there was more people who were Democrats at Twitter, so they probably,
you know, it's a more liberal. They had a more liberal, more liberal staff.
Yeah.
That was part of that. That would kind of censor things they felt. The so-called fact checkers would censor stuff that they felt was not appropriate.
So this was supposed to be a big deal. It really was not received as a big deal. I know they're trying to push it on Fox News, and I know, you know, it's fun for, I guess, conservatives.
Well, what do you mean not a? What do you mean in particularly not a big deal?
The biggest deal was the fact that both the Biden team and the Trump administration were trying to get stories squashed. That's the biggest deal. But nobody's talking about that because on the right, they're all in a froth about Hunter Biden.
Because there was nakedness and drugs and prostitutes.
Right.
No, I know. No, the salacious part aside, they're really upset because they're saying that, in a way, he was being paid directly to provide influence through his father.
And I said right from the beginning, okay, then get to the bottom of that. If that's the case, we have a problem.
Yeah.
But they don't focus on that.
No.
I think why both parties are doing it and why it's kind of taken a back seat to the Hunter Biden story is that looking at it as an overview, basically Twitter is very left slanted and was very
not anymore.
Right. But what I'm saying is, as an overview, is pretty much left slanted. So if you're going to go, well, you know, the Republicans did it too. Yeah, but not as much as. The Democrats did.
But here's the thing. Here's the problem. I don't have a problem if a company wants to be left or right slanted, like Gab or Truth Social. Those are right slanted. I don't have a problem with that. So if Twitter happens to be left slanted, I don't have a problem with that either. I just have the problem that when government tries to influence what's going on.
Just as an overview, we're going to take that. And put it against the Hunter Biden story, okay? Because it was so left-slanted, even though the Republicans did have influence on it too, it's going to be a B story over the prevalence of it so much more left-focused than the Hunter Biden story. So, you know, as stories making a forefront, the laptop story is going to be a little bit more forefront than both sides because it's so left-centered. Well, the Republic, not as much. We got to look at the laptop now. You know?
But again, to play devil's advocate,
I'm not saying it's right or wrong either.
Hold on, but in real time, I don't think it's outrageous to think this is hacked, and Twitter doesn't want to post hacked materials. You know, so I don't think, because it was so ridiculous. This is happening in real time. We're 2 years later now and go, oh, well, they should have, because it turns out to be true. But at the time, it seemed ridiculous. Don't give your shit to the son of the candidate is so drunk off his ass, he leaves his computer at a place, and then that guy gives it to Steve Bannon? I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, but who is the person that's deeming it that far-fetched? And who is not the person that's not giving a benefit of a doubt on a platform that is supposed to be free?
Because when the story, again, I'll go over it again. Biden is winning at the time in the polls, for whatever those are worth. Rupert Murdoch, who owns the New York Post and Fox News and the Wall Street Journal, is all in and DJT. Not so much now. We'll see what happens in the future. All in DJT. A few days before the election, a laptop shows up out of nowhere, allegedly left by the president's son, not the one who died, who's a war hero and died of cancer. The other one, I guess, who's a fuck up. You know, you're Don Jr. of the Biden family.
Yes,
Joe's Don Jr.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Eric was the stellar son?
I'm not saying there is.
You cannot hold your tissue up to the screen. We all don't need to see your snot.
I'm sorry. I was starting to sneeze. I had to rub my nose.
Hanging off that tissue like fucking Tarzan.
Yeah, but I'm going to defend you. Well, first of all, I'm going to say you're right. And second of all, I'm going to say, wait a minute. I picked up the phone, and the first thing I heard was you clearing your throat. So slow down. Slow down.
I'm not giving a fucking visual on it. I don't
not yet.
Thank like her tissue's got to be prime time with snot hanging all over
it. It's a crime scene up in this place.
No, there was no snot hanging all over it on the camera side.
Yeah, I don't enjoy that as much as I don't think our fans do either.
Here, let me give you the bat in the cave view.
Stop it.
So basically, the New York Post was really the only one that's all in on this thing. And I get that. It was their story. And I can relate.
Sure.
Now, here's the thing. I can actually relate to this shit. Do you guys remember years ago when I was all in those anti-scamming groups?
Yeah.
And it used to fucking drive me nuts.
Yeah.
Remember the story I broke, how the U.S. Army was working with civilians and removing profiles that they deemed to be scammers. But not only were those profiles being removed, they were removing enemies of these so-called anti-scammers who were other anti-scammers. And I reported the story. Nobody talked to me about that shit. Yeah. And that was free speech.
Right.
That was government free speech. So yeah, it does happen. It is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not focusing on the right thing.
No.
So that was the first Twitter dump.
Yeah, dump. No. I mean, there are a number of different problems here. I mean, as much as I think, well, you know, he bought the social media platform, and he is the owner, and that does entitle him to do whatever he wants with it. However, it's so just reprehensible that he's taken this thing that a lot of people all over the world were using as their only means of communication outside of the communities where they are so suppressed with what information they can get out. Twitter was a lifeline for people all over the world, and to take that and just be like a petulant child and like kick your toys through the sandbox, and break it is just unbelievable.
Well, what has he done to break it?
All right, well, to Pip's point, I think Twitter, I agree with Pip that Twitter is more valuable in other countries than it is this country.
Yes.
It's really not valuable here.
Yeah, we just blab back and forth here, but I mean, in other countries, that's the only way that they're allowed to talk.
And to Joe's point, he might break it for a casual user like us.
Yeah.
But I think it's still that lifeline to people in other countries like Iran.
But I don't understand where he would be cutting that lifeline off.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I don't think he has done that. I think he might have ruined the experience for people like Pip and I.
Yes, absolutely.
We were never huge fans of Twitter to begin with.
No.
But to your point, I don't think it really affects people in foreign countries that don't have a voice. I think that the
smash and burn, you know, let me go in and fire half the people. And then
the thing about firing half the people was there was a lot of redundancy there, where people were coming in and they were like three people for one thing. They were getting the catered meals. And as a businessman, he decided to chop that down.
But the
smash and burn, I mean, was going in saying, all you people leave. And then all of a sudden realizing, oh, some of you people I actually needed.
Yes.
Please come back.
Which he did.
It was just done in just such a haphazard, like, burn!
To the broad Twitter point.
Yeah.
You can't allow all this hate speech, which is now a lot more hate speech on there, and then whine that that companies don't want to advertise with you anymore. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
I mean, because if I'm Apple and your platform has a lot more hate speech, I don't need to sell my iPhone to them.
What the problem is, too, it's a double-edged sword, because you have people that are deeming something that they don't agree with as hate speech.
No. Kike, hate speech. Fag, hate speech. Nigger, hate speech. Always hate speech. Always has nothing to do with agreeing. Hateful words.
Is it doing bodily harm? Is it threatening?
That's not what we're talking about.
It's a matter of opinion.
No. Those are deemed hateful words by the parties who they affect. By the Jewish people, by gay people, by black people, the vast majority of them, it's usually used in a hurtful and hateful way. Again, he can do it. I don't care. I don't care what he does with this platform. I seriously do not care what happens to Twitter. I do not like it. I've never liked it. But don't whine when nobody wants to advertise. That's all I'm saying. People want to advertise where a lot of people are and where people aren't threatened. If I have a product, I'm going there as opposed to the Stormtroopers website, which was the ones who were part of Charlottesville, which are back now on Twitter. He's bringing back all these hate groups that were kicked off Twitter. All the organizers of the Charlottesville march, all these type of people are now back on Twitter. Again, he can do it. I always say that. His platform, he can do it. But don't whine when people don't want to be there.
Well, but also, I don't think I can't say I don't care. Because when you see immediately such an uptick in the N-word being used, and we have so many social problems with hate, and people, and it's not just talking about hate, people are emboldened to go act on their hate.
Here's what Elon
and talk
Musk
to
has
each other
realize.
To gather to and act their hate.
Here's a
problem.
Here's my 5-second psychiatry on Elon Musk.
Okay.
This guy wanted to be loved.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a champion of free speech.
Okay.
I get that. He thought there was an injustice with free speech. Mm-hmm. I get that too.
Okay.
There might have been, as we're talking about.
Yeah.
But now you're getting a lot of your love from racists, homophobes, and anti-Semites. When those are the people that love you, if you're a good person, maybe you go, slow down. This did not work the way I thought it. There's other people giving him applaudits too. It's not just these hateful people.
No, I know, but the bigots love me.
Yeah.
I am fulfilled.
Yeah, exactly. When the bigots are your biggest cheerleaders, it might be time to reassess. And a lot of the people who did evaluate what was hate speech and were banning those people are fired now.
Right.
And he knows he's losing money because he wants you to pay for verification. That's coming back again. Again, I don't care what happens to Twitter. I think the platform sucks. I always thought it sucked. The only reason I'm on most of these social media sites is to find scammer girlfriends. No.
Or they find you.
Because I have to promote shit that nobody reads. That's why.
Yes.
I have to waste my day promoting shit that doesn't even show up in people's algorithms.
Right. No, I know.
So,
you know, but sometimes, you know, for the rights of free speech, you have to have some dissenting voices, even though it could be hate speech. It's like, if you get the God Hates Fags movement, okay, and they're out protesting, God hates fags, and you're going to die if you're gay and stuff like that. They're crazy. They're out of their mind. But they have their right.
Joe.
Their voice.
Joe, I'm not saying I'm not saying he has to kick them off. I didn't say. I'm just saying don't whine when your membership goes down and companies don't want to advertise with you. That's all I'm saying.
Then you got a point on that. Where if you're going to have your position on it, you're going to a position on what you're going to have on the platform. Yeah, you're going to have to. You know, you're going to have to march on lockstep. I mean, it's almost like when we were talking about talking about politics on stage or whatever. You know, if you feel that that's the way you want to go, you do have the right to do that. You also have the right to take, you also are going to be liable to take the consequences, and that's your decision to make going down that path.
Well, I think he actually tweeted something funny. He's like, how do you make a small fortune on a social media platform? Start with a large fortune.
That's pretty funny.
It's a funny tweet yet. I'll give him that. Yeah, but I mean, this has been a boondoggle for him. He didn't want this thing.
Oh,
he just wanted to be a pest, and now he's the problem. But that's okay.
Yeah.
All right. So there's more of these Twitter files. So yeah, I mean, it seems like the stories were suppressed. I thought there was some overreach at the time too. But then again, if you're looking at this seems like a hack. If you look at it from that mindset, they did the right thing. because they couldn't verify it because the New York Post wouldn't show it to anybody else.
True.
And I get why the New York Post wouldn't do it. This is our scoop. But you could show them a couple. You could show other media outlets a couple of things.
Yeah.
Give them just a nibble. Hey, we got more. You can be the first one with every story.
Right.
But let the other news go, all right, this is true. If you're really trying to be a news source.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that, so Twitter did what it thought it was right. As I said, the biggest problem is the government trying to affect what is on Twitter.
That's the problem, too. Plus, with that story, I mean, the whole process of Twitter when it came out was an exchange of an idea. It was exchanging of ideas or a discussion of ideas. So if you put that story out on the hunt, you know, you have the right to put that story out. You know, you also have the right for a whole lot of people to go, this is absolute horseshit, and start saying why it's horseshit. It's an exchange of an idea. Well, this is what the Post says. Well, the Post is full. You know, you have that right to go back.
All right.
It's the town square.
I understand what you're saying, but remember what the backdrop, leading up to the 2016 election, there was all these false stories on social media about Hillary Clinton and Pizzagate, and all this false shit was proliferating on social media. So what you had was the social media company, because that was a problem. So the social, and there's not really a good answer to any of this, but the social media companies went the other way, because at first glance, it looks like, here we go again. We're trying. Yes. Somebody's trying to take down Trump's opponent.
It did look like
it
that.
It looks like bullshit. We're not going to do what we did last time. So that was the backdrop of it. There's not really a good answer to any of this. I mean, because Joe's like, well, listen, if you want the exchange of ideas, then you let all this shit go up there. And I'm fine with that, because I'm the type of person who doesn't believe the shit on social media and will actually research something.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of people will not do that.
Right.
So,
but the thing about it is, if you have enough people, if you put something out, let's the Biden, and a lot of people don't, but you have enough people putting out their opinions, okay, it's almost like the research being done for you. Well, this is bullshit because of this, this, and this, and this, this, and that. And if, you know, and you have the freedom to put out your opinion, shouting down why you don't believe it to the person that feels that they have their opinion made on it. You have that right, as much as you have the right of putting it on there.
Like, listen, I hear.
We have to let that person that you can't be swayed. You have to let that go as a byproduct for freedom to make those choices and suggestions and rebuttals.
But the social media platforms wanted to have it go, well, we're not the news companies, but then a lot of people do look at them at news companies.
They've transcended that.
Right, but the problem was, it's a weird place. I hear your argument, but the problem was these false stories proliferate, and a lot of them weren't even by Americans. They were by Russian bots.
And Chinese
in Iran. And now it's affecting our election. So, Joe, I hear your argument. I'm not even disagreeing with your argument.
Right.
I'm just saying there was all these other things at play.
Yeah.
And, like, I wish Elon Musk would be responsible and go, listen, Here's what happened, but keep in mind all this. This was also all in the air too.
Yes.
And like, if he really wanted to go, let the people decide, and they're listening to Elon Musk, and he's a smart guy. He could do all the stuff that I just did now, and it would mean so much more. Do the Twitter files dump. This is what we did. But in their defense, not defending it, not saying it's right, it's wrong. All this other stuff had happened in the years leading up to it. So this is why maybe they made that. He doesn't want to do that, though. He wants to be a petulant little bitch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, you know, for the past hour and stuff, we found things, you know, like we're talking about past things. But what we found out in the past hour and a half on the show is where we are today. The laptop story is true. Masks don't work the way we thought. The vaccines don't work the way we thought. You know, we're finding out things that 2 years ago was kind of set in cement, which now we're finding out, well, maybe not so much.
Right, but it's
and
not
with that
fair.
Mindset,
but Joe,
we might feel that we need to take a different tack.
But Joe,
presenting information or censoring it.
But Joe, what I'm saying is, it's not fair for us to judge what happened 2 years ago with the knowledge we have now that it is true.
Exactly.
But that's what I'm saying.
I think we need to take a different view of things.
But that's my point. Elon Musk could have done this and put out all the other stuff that was going on and that led up to it too if he really wanted to have that freedom of ideas and discussion and free speech, if he really wanted to give context and have an intelligent conversation. But no, he wants to stick an eye in the people of Twitter. He wants to be some right-wing hero, which is fine. I don't really care. But I'm saying, if you really wanted to do something good and you just felt the need to get this out, he could have had the conversation we just had. Yeah. He doesn't want to do that. And that's his toy. Yeah, that's fine.
All right, and that boils down to it, you know. And like I said, he's almost like a modern day Howard Hughes in the sense that he is, you know, he's involved in science, he's involved in aviation, he's involved with technology, he's involved with media. You know, and he's one of those guys that, you know, now he's probably designing another rocket, or he's trying to figure out how to get men back up to the moon. And the thing, so, you know, it's one of those things where he's kind of a renaissance guy in that fact where, yeah, now he's got this platform, but how involved is he going to be, you know, before he goes, all right, I got to build a rocket now. You know?
I think it would be in his best interest to get somebody to run it for him ASAP.
Too sweet.
Yeah. All right, but that was one Twitter dump.
Yeah.
But I think the whole context thing is important.
Yeah, I think it is too. I don't think that I know that not a perfect world, but in a better world, there would have been context added to this. But the thing is that he just wanted to throw out what's there, and it's like, you guys pick amongst it. You know, you guys feed on this. And I would like to think that most people are intelligent enough to sort through that.
Get the fuck out. I know. How dare you?
But I have seen over the years our country torn apart because there's also this ability or agreement amongst people that if you tell the same lie often enough, the people will believe you. And I've seen this happening.
Let me summarize this for you. Pip would like to think you're smart enough, but Pip unfortunately doesn't believe you are.
Not anymore. Not anymore.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't think most of us are smart enough.
That's all. I tweeted it. I made it in 180 characters or less.
You boiled it down for me.
I did. Yeah, Joe. And then I'm going to move on.
Now, and like I said, it's like a toy for him because basically he's got other things he needs to worry about. Specifically, with regards to Tesla, he's got the cars are now starting to age, and he's got to figure out when these things go out of warranty, how much is it going to be replacing the batteries? How much, you know, what is it going to cost people that have bought these cars to keep them? He also has a problem with Ford, which is catching up to him with the technology of electric car, which will figure out where the marketplace for Tesla is. He also has the rocket business where he's sending up the satellites, but now he wants to, you know, he's got the latest one where he wants to send up the moon mission went fine. Now he's got to figure out how to send manned vehicles up to the moon to get it reestablished up there. So in his grand theme of things, Twitter is kind of a toy or a diversion. He's got, in his business sense and his business model, he's got other serious fish to fry. So I think his concern on Twitter is kind of like something as a diversion.
I think he was looked at more favorably by more people when he was the rocket guy instead of the social media guy. All right, let's move on because there's more of these Twitter dumps. Former New York Times columnist Barry Weiss, she got fired from there, released the second installment of the Twitter Files on Thursday night, sharing images of accounts that Twitter allegedly placed on various types of blacklists. Weiss posted several images of what appears to be an internal Twitter system that marked certain accounts as being under various kinds of blacklists, in addition to flagging other information about the accounts. Jay Bhattacharya, health policy professor from Stanford University who opposed COVID-19 lockdowns, appeared to have been placed on a trends blacklist, as it was the right-wing libs of TikTok account. That's a stupid name, but whatever. According to the photos, I don't follow any of their shit. The account of conservative commentator Dan Bonino, by the way, he's out of his fucking mind, was apparently placed on a search blacklist. While the photo seemed to show Turning Point USA president Charlie Kirk had his account marked as "Do Not Amplify." I'd like to get my account amplified. The images also appeared to show that several of the accounts had been flagged with recent abuse strike and that more basic information, such as when the accounts were Twitter Blue verified or high profile, had also been noted. Weiss also shared purported screenshots of internal messages from Yoel Roth, who now had to leave his house because he's being threatened, Twitter's former head of safety and integrity, including one in which he appeared to ask for research on non-removal policy interventions like disabling engagements and de-amplification visibility. All right, so this is basically about the shadow ban that we heard.
Yeah.
That I go, that's full of shit. Apparently it was true.
I know.
Okay, again, not good. Again, it's their fucking platform. Now, the only thing is, the only argument here is, now it's Elon's platform. I don't know what it was when, at one point, it was Jack Dorsey's, and then it was publicly traded.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a publicly traded platform, I would argue this is more of a problem. Because we all own it. You know, anybody who has a share.
Yeah,
it,
yeah.
As opposed to it being Elon's toy. Well, now you're asking me to invest in it, but what exactly am I investing in if all the shenanigans are going on? That's a problem. You're not being forthright with your investors.
I'm trying to look for a metaphor. You're fraudulent. Well, I'm just saying, like, if there's a publicly traded corporation, say, and they say that they've come up with product, but they're hiding from their shareholders, like, egregious errors in that product.
That's a problem.
Yeah, so, is there some sort of, I'm struggling for the word, like, if you have, like, a secret ingredient, you know, there's something that is your corporate secrets, are you beholden to let your shareholders know those?
No, your first analogy was correct, because that the first analogy was something that does harm. This is doing harm.
But could they argue that it wasn't doing harm?
Because if you're investing in a free thought and ideas, as long as you follow the guidelines, mm-hmm. It didn't say that these people didn't follow the guidelines.
They're cherry picking
right.
Who they were going to shadow ban.
Right.
So I'm just trying to think this out loud with you guys. Like, if. All right, so it's not like they are saying, okay, this is our formula for what makes the chicken so good is that we cherry pick out the people. It's like this was something that is harmful to the product, but we didn't tell you that there's this other stuff going on in the background.
Well, I mean, it's just they're fraudulent. It's not a freedom or an exchange of ideas.
Well, you know, it is in any, you know, in a lot of big companies. I'm dealing with something now in the day program, a big company I deal with, owned by a bigger company, and there's a certain philosophy in there with new people taking over, and it's in a state of flux, and the new people taking over, some of their policies I don't agree with and I think are foolish, and I don't think they have a sense of urgency to things. It's a big, you know, but that's their philosophy. And in big business, sometimes you do have a philosophy there that is not good for the company, that, you know, perpetuates, you know, and it is what it is.
All right.
You change, you know, and there's turnover and policy changes. It's, you know, business, regardless if it's, you know, an entertainment company or, you know, manufacturing company, it's the way big corporate entities run.
So I'm going to ask you guys, because we are, you know, we do have a schedule we'd like to keep. I have another Twitter dump which I did not share with you guys. It came out today. It's about how Donald Trump's account was removed from Twitter. I can play that for you, or we can move on to the next story.
Well, we're here in town. Why not stay?
Yeah, let's...
Then I don't want to hear that we go fucking long. I don't want to hear it.
No, but we're on the topic, so
I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
Correspondent Mike Emanuel is live in Washington. What new, Mike, are we learning?
Fascinating, John. Basically going through the steps that led to President Trump's removal in the aftermath of January 6th, the fifth installment in the Twitter files. It's all about the removal of then-President Trump from the social media platform after the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Independent journalist Barry Weiss tweeting a short time ago, quote, "On the morning of January 8th, President Donald Trump, with one remaining strike before being at risk of permanent suspension from Twitter, tweets twice. At 6:46 a.m., the president tweeted about the 75 million people who voted for him, noting, quote, they will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form. And then Weiss reveals internal debate from unnamed Twitter staffers about whether that was incitement. Weiss notes, quote, after January 6th, Twitter employees organized to demand their employer ban Trump. Quote, there is a lot of employee advocacy happening, said one Twitter employee. There was some internal pushback. Quote, I am not seeing clear or coded incitement in the DJT tweet, wrote Annika Navaroli, a Twitter policy official. I'll respond in the elections channel and say that our team has assessed and found no vios or violations for the DJT one. Weiss also notes former President Trump was treated differently than some foreign leaders. Quote, in June 2018, Iran's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei tweeted, Israel is a malignant cancerous tumor in the West Asian region that has to be removed and eradicated. It is possible and it will happen. Twitter neither deleted the tweet nor banned the Ayatollah. And India's prime minister tweeted in early February 2021, threatening to arrest Twitter employees if they restored accounts that had been critical of him. Twitter did not ban him.
Okay, yeah, Trump was treated differently in that. I don't know. They always said that they weren't banning world leaders who were saying outrageous things because it was newsworthy.
Right.
And Trump was certainly newsworthy.
Sure.
I think with Trump, what just happened was they just said, enough of this shit. It was on the heels of January 6th. I mean, because I always said, because he always did things to violate their terms of agreement. He was always doing things that could inspire violence or hate or hateful things. Often attacking people,
mm-hmm.
and bullying people, which you weren't allowed to do. And they always let him on there. And I'm like, well, what the hell's the point? You should have gotten rid of him. But they didn't want to do that because he was newsworthy.
Sure.
So I think at that point Twitter's like, this guy's going to be gone. Enough. I think it was very human. Enough of this shit. Will he just shut the fuck up?
You do have a large contingency there that are young, that are far left and liberal, and they're going to be very biased against Trump. And they probably all banded together and said, we want to ban this guy because we don't like what he's saying, even though it is a free speech issue.
Yeah, there was more inflammatory tweets over the years than those two. I think it was just like...
It was hard on the heels of January 6th.
I think that's what it was.
Which was just like, they were just waiting. Just say one more friggin' thing. One more thing! And they were done. Because they were just probably, you know, so ready.
Listen.
And then that was a straw.
For my money, they should have kicked his fat ass off there long ago. And yeah. The Ayatollah.
Yeah.
And the Indian prime minister. If you're going to have rules, I don't care if you have a blue check mark on it or not. If you're going to have rules, let's have rules, kids. If you're not going to have rules, then we can all say whatever the hell we want. That was the problem.
It was newsworthy.
Isn't their prime directive of a free discussion of ideas?
No.
What those ideas are and to rebut those ideas?
No. Their prime directive is to make money, my friend. And Donald Trump, he's nothing else if not a moneymaker, because he had hundreds of millions of followers and retweets, and people couldn't wait to see what he would fart out next. He was good for business. He wasn't going to be as important anymore because he had 12 more days to be president. They made the brave stand on his final 12 days. They're going to kick him off. I mean, come on.
But he never went away.
Donald Trump. His influence is not nearly what it was when he was on Twitter. Nobody goes on Truth Social.
The thing about it is thinking as a news source. The cable news programs still talk about him.
Yep.
You know.
Well, he's running for president.
Because it makes the money. It brings ratings. So
yes.
For Twitter to say, well, we're just out to make money. Well, you let him tweet because that makes you money. That
yes.
People in.
That's what I just said. Yes,
I understand that. So you can't. But you can't. Why would they kick him off?
Because he wasn't going to be president much longer. He wasn't going to make them the same amount of money.
But to my argument about that, he's still making news. Not regardless if he's not going to be president, even if he's not a private citizen again, he's still making news.
But is he?
People in, bringing in people to, for advertising.
Yes, he is.
So he's still making the money.
Hold on. That, when he was president, and then we'll move on to something else. When he was president, he was making news, because as Joe likes to say, about policy. Even though a lot of his tweets weren't about policy, there was policy things, world decisions going on, our relationship internationally. You know, when he tweet, and he would tweet about international shit. He would tweet about everything because the man takes a lot of dumps and he's got a lot of time to poop and tweet. He would tweet about that stuff. After he was no longer president, yes, it's newsworthy because he's a former president, but should it really shake the world? No! He's just a crazy old man at a golf club.
But in the sense of entertainment,
or
going to somebody, because we're going to exchange, he's no longer the president. So we're trying, if it's newsworthy, and speaking on the thing about newsworthy, the way the cable companies bring it, you know, because he's still out there, you substitute policy for rhetoric. If rhetoric is still bringing people in, we're making money, just the way the cable companies are. So even though, you know, so policy is out, but rhetoric is in. Now, we're running a company. We're trying to make a profit. Why would we get rid of something that is going to bring people in? Regardless of we're switching
policy
to rhetoric, he's still bringing the people in.
Because the juice at that point was no longer worth the squeeze. Because it just wasn't worth it anymore. Because he wasn't going to be president anymore, and he was just such a pain in the ass. That's what it was. They made a decision. Enough. If he would have won re-election, well, first of all, he wouldn't have had January 6th. But if he would have won re-election, they would have let him kept on like.
But like I said, due to the people, the MAGNA people wanting to see the treats, and the people from the left and the critics that want to criticize the tweets, just as running a business and running content, you still would want to have him on to have the content on there. You're bringing people in, you're creating controversy. Controversy brings in people. People bring in ratings. That's the platform of cable. That's their business model. Twitter, which should follow that business model, as they're pretty much entertainment or as a news source.
But I know that you don't agree with me on this, but I think that there's a vast difference between courting controversy and fomenting an insurrection. And I know that we disagree on this topic, but when you have the standing, for the moment, President of the United States rubbing his little hands together saying, oh, they're trying to go after, Congress, and the vice president's there, and so while that's happening, let me say some shit about that so it'll fan the flames. You kind of get your free speech entertainment card revoked at that moment. If the speech by the Ayatollah saying
rock and roller
said that, you know, Israel is something to be crushed, and if days later, all of a sudden, his country had started bombing the crap out of Israel. Well, you can kind of see, here's point A, here's point B.
By the way,
inciting violence and war and insurrection is different.
Can I say something brief here? I want to say something very brief.
Cable news covers that day in and day out.
I want to say something very brief here. The soundtrack to the Vietnam War was very often The Doors and that type of music. I'd like to say that the soundtrack to the bombing of Israel would be Kanye. I'd like to.
Oh yes, really.
I'd like to say this would be the war with the best rhythm and rhymes to date.
Bite your tongue.
and Pip, I'm coming from a place of greed, and my bottom line.
Isolate that.
I'm sorry, a place of what?
A moral stance. The news programs, the cable news programs, cover the same stuff to bring in the ratings and to bring in the dollars. So from a money standpoint, more than a moral standpoint, I don't understand why Twitter would not do that if they're a company trying to make money.
Yeah, because everybody's probably bitching enough. I mean, at some point, you got to go to the office with these people.
Yeah.
No, I understand that, you know, all the news media were covering it because, of course, it's crazy newsworthy.
Right.
But they're not the direct conduit of the incitement.
Let's do some School of Fools. Parents in Detroit suburb of Dearborn, extended their complaints about sexually explicit content in the school district's libraries at Monday board meeting, where a local mother read concerning passages about masturbation from a coming-of-age semi-autobiographical Mike Curato graphic novel called Flamer. "We know our rights as parents, and we know that right now our rights are being infringed upon," the mother said to the board. Well, maybe you don't know your rights.
I got to tell you something. She's hot-looking. If I had to hear that, I would have got a rod.
Oh, Joe, always the journalist.
This exclusive.
This just in. I have a boner. This just in. Her ass. Am I right? Am I right? Am I right, weatherman? Breaking news. Like her hymen. Am I right?
Personally, I would have gotten a rod.
The barometer's rising in my pants over her.
This just in, I wish.
Such journalistic integrity Mr. Curry brings to the show. How does this guy not get that's not a Pulitzer, what do they call it? A Peabody.
A Peabody.
I put my pee in her body. Am I right?
Am I right, ladies and gentlemen? I try to be, huh?
Oh my God!
Mr. Journalist, we know. Oh boy, she pushed back against the claim that the book should go back on the shelf in Dearborn schools, stating her refusal to return it and saying she would pay the library fine. That's going to cost you nickels. You can reorder it, whatever you're going to do. I'm going to shove it up your ass like Joe wants me to.
Whoa, hey!
Joe likes butt play in the school library. Always has.
Careful with that binder.
A paper cut in your anus. That's going to smart.
Oh, tell me about it.
Oh, and I was a woman with a Fisher. You know, okay.
That's why I said tell me about it.
The passage mentioned.
The passage mentioned
the protagonist, Elias, in the room with male friends who are masturbating. "We're each busting a load in the bottle." I'm using my sexy voice.
Oh.
"If you don't come, you have to drink it," she read aloud. Now Joe's really turned on. Go on!
Oh, God!
I learned about masturbation.
I would have been a problem. I go, "Could you read that again, but slower?"
I'm going to need an act out. I don't comprehend. My reading comprehension, not so good.
I only learn by pantomime.
I'm coming in a bottle. Ooh, it's milky. Anyway, all right. I learned about masturbation 2 years ago, kind of by accident, as one is wont to do.
That feels weird.
No one ever told me what it was, the book continued, diving into a segment in which the protagonist remembers the time he discovered a pornographic film his father had hidden in the house. Not in a good place. The book also makes explicit references to genitals and contains images of naked teenage boys. Go on.
Wait, hold on.
That's where my rod goes down.
And mine goes up.
Yeah, I have to get the sawdust for Pip.
I would have yelled out at the minute, "You had me till now, lady."
You ruined it. Why does there have to be other boys? I don't care if they're teenagers. Why can't it just be me, your special boy?
Sit down. I'm just saying.
Come here, sit on my lap, and I'll tell you a story.
That would be Joe's complaint at the school board meeting. Listen, I was into it, but it killed the fucking mood. I mean, leave the book on the shelf. Just rip out those couple of pages.
I'll take them home and peruse them slowly, alone.
I'm going to need to review this book over and over and over again. I don't think we're covering the story properly.
No, I don't think we are. I think we missed the point.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. Screwed up. Board members cut the mother's reading short to call up the next speaker. Finish up, whore! But audience,
let her finish! Let her finish!
I'll give up my turn. Go on! Go on!
Yes,
that's when he brought in the young boys. It's like, all right, enough. We can't get a rod off of this. Next! Somebody's next!
If it was a Catholic school, they could.
Well, they say, "I relinquish my time to the speaker."
Flamer, has created a stir in other communities across the U.S., including in Oklahoma, where State Superintendent of Public Instruction Joy Hoffmeister called the book to be banned from all public schools. There shall be no joy on my watch. This is inappropriate, sexually explicit material. It's pornography that does not belong in any public school library. It belongs in the teacher's lounge, goddammit!
That's my special bathroom reading.
We reached out to Tulsa Public Schools and are calling for the book to be removed immediately. Parental rights advocates have put Dearborn in the spotlight in recent weeks with allegations that other sexually explicit materials were found in area schools. The district enacted a book policy in October allowing parents to opt their children out of certain books, but parents argued that finding which books are inappropriate should not be their responsibility. How can I be expected to know what I don't want my kids to read? my biggest concern is, why is the burden of the parents to find these books when I can just go to the school board meeting and share it here? What happens when the parents who don't read or speak English, why is it on them to opt out? Well, that's when we have the act out.
Look, everybody, this one's naughty.
It's about pussy. They don't know what's going on, one speaker, Jeff Sale, said at a recent board. How do these books even end up in our library in a brown paper bag? I mean, these books are really bad book. When I'm looking at it, I cringe, and Joe gets hard, so it's weird. It's all
nutty.
They don't belong in the hands of 13, 14, and 15-year-olds. What about their pants?
Down their pants.
Despite outrage, others claim the book should remain out of solidarity with the LGBTQ+ community. Is this really the best way we could show solidarity?
Is this how we have to do it?
Can't we do a rainbow flag? I mean, that would be nice.
Can we have, like, discussion groups or something? Yeah, Do we have to have, like, you know, straight porn?
I don't know if we need to have straight porn either, but... When reached for comment,
that's solidarity with Joe.
Yes, we all mark lots more. Fuck it, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I can't even talk. It's like it's in my mouth. When reached for comment, Dearborn Public Schools told Fox News Digital that Flamer is not included.
Fox News Amor is my favorite.
Did they leave a message?
What?
What did they leave a message after the beep? Digital.
They sent a picture. It's not included in classroom instruction and sent a press release detailing the district's current book reviews. According to the press review, although Flamer was not a part of the list of challenged books, it will remain in libraries in high school level. The district also took action to remove some books it considered to be inappropriate for students. We are pleased with the results of the book challenge, as we want to ensure that our libraries have content that is appropriate for our students and that they do not provide material with gratuitous or unnecessary graphic content. Just the necessary graphic content. Adam Martin, Dearborn Public School Official, Executive Director of Student Achievement for the Forts and Feeder Track, said in the release, ugh. Two books removed from the all district libraries were Push by Sapphire and Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Royal. They even have gay names. Rainbow Royal.
Wait, hold on. I can't write that fast. Yeah. What books am I supposed to read?
And Curator's Flamer were restricted to high school level libraries. The Lovely Bones by Alice Siebold, another book in question, was deemed appropriate for high school audiences that will remain on shelves. With roughly 500,000 books in our school libraries, we realized the likelihood that there could be... All right, a few books snuck through. All right, a couple things. First of all, I posted this on Facebook, and of course, I got an argument. I was watching an old episode, because it's the only type of episodes there are, of the All in the Family spinoff, Archie's Place, which was from like 1983. Same fucking argument. So, literally 40 years ago.
We're still arguing.
There's a lot of stuff on All in the Family, which preceded that, which was, you know, of the it's the same shit. Also, I, you know, I'll watch Dragnet in the morning on the, yeah, getting ready for work. Still same shit, different year, you know?
Yeah, so yes. So like the whole story of like everything's changed, we're coming to the end, things are getting worse. Nah, it's always been this way.
Yeah, it's always been this way.
It's fun.
Same culture wars over and over.
All right, so a couple things here. I think on the high school level you can certainly have more adult books.
Sure.
On the high school level. What I would want to know, what is the point of some of these books? Like, if it's just gratuitously pornographic, okay, mm-hmm. you got me. If there's a lesson to be learned, if it's so a child can relate to growing up, and then I'm more lenient towards it. If somebody can explain to me why this should be there,
yeah,
then I'm like, okay, again, leave it on the high school level books. Now, where they lose me where they lose these go, how can I be expected to know what my kids are going to read when you have a clear opt-out language, and I would much rather make a stink at this meeting as opposed to use the thing that you have in place so I could do this, and I can listen to what other people are offended by on my behalf. All right, now you lost me.
And I agree on that, because, and I do agree on, you know, basically on a high school level, yeah, if they're not going to, you know, put it a part of, like, a required reading, but have the child decide if they want to read the book on their own, that's fine. Also, I agree with you on that. We want to be involved with our children and what's going on. All right, pick the book. We don't have time for that shit. What's it going to be? What's it going to be? What do you want? You know, it's going to be either or. You know, so yeah, everybody gets a red ass on this one.
Red asses all around.
Yeah.
If on the heels of Flamer and a rod, everybody gets a red ass. Quite the news story.
Everybody's got to come upstairs. I mean, this is, you know, really.
Yeah, I do think that there, like Devin was saying, that, you know, if it's gratuitous and there's no point to it, I don't really see, you know, I don't want to encourage kids to be reading porn at young ages. But however, I mean, I do think that high school age kids do have the ability to take in sexuality and, you know, decide for themselves how they feel about it, what the point is, you know, especially in the larger context of a book that, you know, is meaningful. It's not part of the curriculum, but they should be allowed to go into a public library and pick out whatever they want. It's in a school library.
I agree with you, and at 16 and up, I don't think, under that guideline, I don't think there's a problem with that.
Yeah, it's, who are we kidding? They're watching our movies. They're inundated with things on television.
On their phones.
On the internet.
On their phones.
On the phones.
In their hands.
It's in their hands. And in real life, we're pretending these kids aren't having sex? Come on.
Well, I am.
I know. You want to have that culpable deniability.
I'm pretending other kids that are 18 but pretend that they're in high school are having sex that I can pull up on a videos just by the, well, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, I see. They're pretending to be 16. They're really of age, so you can watch.
I miss the good old days when our high schoolers that we watched or learned about were 35, like 90210.
I know. It's like, I don't want to be feeling all kinds of oogie feelings watching movies and being like, those kids are underage that I'm looking at. Oh, gross. You know?
I just think it's really interesting that this exact shit's been going on for at least 40 years. So when you hear people go, it's the end of the world, as we know, yeah, we'll be fine.
Parents are always intimidated by the idea of their children growing up and sexually maturing and having to make their own decisions.
But I'm not even talking about, I'm just talking about, like in this episode of, it was Catcher in the Rye.
Right.
And, you know, because there was a lot of cursing.
Yeah.
But there was the same thing, pornography and everything, and you had the one parents who were against it, and then you had the, well, why are you deciding for Mike? Same thing.
So, are you there, God? It's me, Alice. That was
like I said, it's not going to change. A lot of times you watch those shows, they're still arguing. I mean, when Meathead and Archie would go, you know, talk about, you know, Nixon and stuff, it's, you know, about the Democratic Party compared to the Republican Party. The same arguments we have on this show. The fucking show is 50 years old. It's always going to be that. And you want to know something? It's part of living in a democratic society. So I think that's why it hasn't changed.
I mean, if you just call me Meathead and you Archie, it's the same show.
Hey there, Pip Healy.
So, I think what we're going to do is we're going to forego Outstanding Display of Spite tonight and Nazi News with Kanye.
Okay, yeah, because we've gone long.
Yeah, well, that's...
That's what she said.
Not when she was with me, unfortunately. So, we will do some scamming scammers when we come back, because it's been a while since we've done anything, to be honest. So, we want to do that. So, we just... scroll. I am encountering some good scammers lately.
Oh,
they are not taken to me.
Well, they're not taken.
Not all of them.
Oh,
that's a shame. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Oh, well, by the way, you two have froze on. Well, actually, never mind. We froze for a second.
No. Okay.
Joe's rod got in the way. All right. On the break, we got new music from Nia McKinney with The Price, and you can learn more at fluttertone.com. And we also have Tenzile with Love Crime. You can learn more about Tenzile at khb-music.de. When we come back, we'll do some scamming scammers. We'll go all the way back to January 17th of 2021, back when we all knew how the vaccines would work.